Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, I hereby declare the opening of the 277th meeting of the committee established pursuant to Security Council Resolution 1373 concerning counterterrorism. Today's meeting is an open meeting of the committee with member states and international, regional, and non-governmental organizations to hear a presentation by Mr. Tony Blair on behalf of Tony Blair Faith Foundation on countering violent extremism through education. It is, of course, a privilege for me to welcome this distinguished former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, Mr. Tony Blair, to this special meeting of the Security Council's Counterterrorism Committee. Mr. Blair joins us today in his capacity as patron of the Tony Blair Faith Foundation, which works on the very important, and I might add, the very sensitive area of strengthening resilience, particularly among young people, to messages of intolerance, hatred, and advocacy of violence that are communicated under the pretext of religion. The work of the Tony Blair Faith Foundation in this area closely parallels the work of other actors that is aimed at confronting and countering messages of extremism and hatred with the ultimate goal of strengthening international peace and security, promoting intercultural understanding, and creating a more tolerant world of ourselves and our children. In the Counterterrorism Committee, we have strived to promote a comprehensive approach to countering the threats of terrorism and violent extremism. We begin by stressing the need of effectively implement Security Council Resolution 1373, adopted in September 2001, which is focused mainly on suppressing and criminalizing acts of terrorism and promoting international cooperation to bring terrorists to justice. However, Resolution 1373, and then even greater extent, Security Council Resolution 1624, which we also monitor, are also very much focused on prevention. Resolution 1624 emphasizes the prevention of terrorism incitement. It also calls upon states to take steps to counter incitement motivated by extremism and intolerance, and to prevent the subversion of educational, cultural, and religious institutions by terrorists and their supporters. As part of our approach to promoting Resolution 1624, we are guided by its emphasis on enhancing dialogue and broadening understanding among civilizations. We have organized forums for dialogue between governmental actors and civil society that seek to identify best practices for countering violent extremism, not solely through law enforcement approaches, but also through other approaches. We have on occasion noted the importance of education in countering violent extremism, but it may be that this is an aspect that we should further develop. There are another partners of ours in the United Nations system that are active in this area. Who should be mentioned in this context? Of course, our colleagues at the Counterterrorism Implementation Task Force actively promote the United Nations Global Counterterrorism Strategy, which was adopted unanimously by the General Assembly in September 2006. The Global Strategy emphasizes in its Pillar 1 the importance of promoting a culture of peace, tolerance, and respect for all religions, including through program of education. The strategy identifies the United Nations educational, scientific, and cultural organizations as a key actor in this field. It should also mention, among others, the vital work of the United Nations Alliance of Civilizations. All of this is to say that I believe that the work and the recommendations of Mr. Blair are very relevant to the work and that is being done within the broader United Nations system to confront and counter extremism messages that advocate hatred and violence. While also, as it is put in the UN Global Counterterrorism Strategy, ensuring that we promote tolerance and respect for all religions, religious values, beliefs, and cultures. It is now my honor and pleasure to welcome Mrs. Susana Malcora, Chief of the Cabinet of the Secretary General. Mrs. Malcora, you have the floor, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Excellencies, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. As you may know, the Secretary General is returning from the Climate Change Conference in Warsaw. On his behalf, I am pleased to join all of you in welcoming Mr. Tony Blair, former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, to this open session of the Counterterrorism Committee of the Security Council. The topic that brings us together today is education. Education to counter and prevent extremist messages and ideologies intended to provoke hatred and violence. Education that enlightens and opens doors of understanding. Education that ensures we adhere to the obligations of international law, including human rights law. Sadly, we are all too aware of the dangers posed by violent extremism and acts of terror. The images have come to us at an almost incomprehensible pace. Markets, schools, places of worship, neighborhoods and communities torn apart by senseless acts of violence. We must work together for strategies to confront this terrible phenomenon, and in particular, to reach young people and to help them see a world of fairness and justice, of opportunity and empowerment. The United Nations is seeking to address this challenge from many fronts. The Security Council's Counterterrorism Committee and its Executive Directorate is working with the states to develop approaches to counterterrorism incitement motivated by extremism and intolerance. The Counterterrorism Implementation Task Force is working with countries to promote implementation of the General Assembly's Global Counterterrorism Strategy. Many United Nations agencies and initiatives, including the Alliance of Civilizations, as well as many courageous civil society actors, are also doing their part. Ultimately, it falls on each of us to cultivate greater understanding through outreach and education. Every society can gain and learn. In communities where symbols of religious minorities are seen as something to oppose or fear, we need continuous engagement. In places where people are screened out of opportunity because of race, faith, or even their name, we have more work to do. And as the Secretary General has said, education can also sometimes mean unlearning, letting go of the stereotypes of the monolithic other, putting an end to labels that do more to divide than define. By working together, we can reach our common goal, a world, to borrow a word on my own language, a world of convivencia, where different faiths and beliefs are respected, where tolerance is practiced, and where the human rights of all are safeguarded. Once again, on behalf of the United Nations and the Secretary General, welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mrs. Malcora, and I would like to renew my warm welcome to Mr. Tony Blair and invite him to make his presentation on countering violent extremism through education. So very
well. Mr. Chairman, Madam Malcora, can I first of all thank the Global Counterterrorism Committee for that kind invitation. It's a very great honour to be here. Actually, the last time I was here and addressed members of the UN Security Council, I was Prime Minister. The date was September 2000. And the world seemed very different. We were trying to articulate the new security order in the aftermath of the fall of the Berlin Wall. And I have to say the mood then was optimistic and the atmosphere light. But today, as you say, we face a scourge that has seen innocent lives taken, communities scarred, nations destabilized, in an arc that stretches from the Far East through the Middle East, even to the streets of cities here in the United States of America. And there could be debates about how we defeat terrorism, about its political causes and effects, and how to resolve them. But there is little disagreement now about the nature of this scourge. It is extremism based on a perversion of religious belief, a fanaticism that abuses faith to justify violence against innocent civilians. We see it in the Middle East, of course, in Central Asia, in many parts of Africa, most recently in the terrible events in Kenya, but also in countries in the Far East, and in the United States, the United Kingdom, and most of Europe. We have either experienced terrorism or are spending vast amounts of money, effort, and energy to prevent it. So my case to you today is very simple. Yes, of course, politics plays its part in fueling this extremism. And the extremists are adept at jumping on the back of political grievances. They use them and they exploit them. But the soil in which they plant the seeds of hate is the soil of ignorance, of warped thinking producing warped minds, and in particular, of a distorted and false view of religion. And we will not deal with the root causes of terrorism unless we confront this. That is why I would say that in the 21st century, education is a security issue. And not any education, but education specifically that opens young minds to the other, those who are culturally and religiously different, and shows them that the only future that works is one in which people are respected as equals, whatever their faith or their culture. You might call it to see myself in you, a concept of peaceful coexistence, which should be our aim. It is time to mobilize and to organize to achieve this aim. And as yet, I don't think we're doing either adequately or with the necessary urgency. The threat from extremism is within the experience of many of the countries represented here in this room. And it is a menace both for what it does directly and for the consequences of division and sectarianism it creates indirectly. Every killing, of course, is a human tragedy. But the act of terrorism also causes a chain reaction of bitterness and hatred. And then there becomes real fear in communities scourged by such extremism. Fear that paralyzes normal life and pushes people away from each other. It is an ideology, even a cult. It resembles the extreme political ideologies like fascism of the 20th century. They too said that they had the answer, and those who disagreed were enemies. Likewise, with extremism based on religion, those that adhere to it insist they have the answer. We most frequently link this to extreme views found in those who claim to follow Islam. But in truth, there are also extremist acts perpetrated against Muslims because of their faith and all the major religions today. have fanatical elements that disfigure the true nature of their faith, whether Christians, Jews, Hindus, or Buddhists. Extremism based on religion defines those who are different as the enemy. And not just their enemy, but the enemy of God. So they justify killing in the name of God. This is, of course, an obscene perversion of proper religious faith, since all main religions have at their core a belief in love of neighbor, compassion, and social justice. But globalization operates to intensify and multiply the impact of extremism. The world is more connected than at any point in human history. Physical integration, online interaction, are so huge that more and more people every day come into contact with each other and with those who are different. So the need to respect a neighbor who is not like you is so much greater. But so unfortunately also is the ability to identify them as an enemy. All of us as people like to belong. Tribe, nation, community, race, or faith. And faith can give a sense of identity. Taken to extremes, that sense of identity and belonging becomes something that regards those who don't belong as inferior, as harmful, as opponents. My point is very simple. The extremists who use religion in this way, they know this very well. And this is what we have to acknowledge. They are organized, they indoctrinate, they get into places of worship, community centers and activities, informal schooling, they're online, in print, and above all, they educate. They propagate, and they do so, unfortunately, quite successfully. Young people swallow this poison. How are they able to organize? Because they play on fear, and fear is born of ignorance. The truth is, many young people have no true understanding of those who are different. So they're often taught misunderstanding and misconception about others. The extremists are able to organize, therefore, because we're not organized. And this is what has to change. We have to educate. We have to educate the next generation of young people to have an open mind, to know about the other, and through that understanding, to learn to respect them as equals. And we have to organize this, to put into our communities, online, and above all, in school, the basic platform of understanding and knowledge that counters the false message of the extremists. And we must look upon this process of education as every bit as important as educating young people about maths or the arts or literature. Of course, for the foreseeable future, governments and states will need to protect themselves by security measures and, where necessary, by force. But this will only ever contain the problem. It doesn't solve it. To solve it, we have to uproot the thinking of the extremists, not simply disrupt their actions. We have to recruit with the same passion as them. We have to organize with the same determination. And we have to put up against their idea of closed-minded exclusion of people who are different, a better idea, the open-minded case for coexistence as the route to prosperity, peace, and progress. The challenge, then, is to show our young people who are vulnerable to appeals from terrorists that there is a better way to live your life, a better path to having your voice heard, a more meaningful way to engage with the world. And we must address the extremists' funding and support so that they have less ability to teach and promote hate, persecution, and murder. And the good news is that you and I, we all know what environments allow those seeds of coexistence to flourish. There are environments where there are sound education programs that promote cultural acceptance of the other. Every successful society today, every economically prosperous society today, is one that embraces cultural acceptance. Indeed, there has rarely been in the recent history of the world a failed state in a place of religious tolerance. The lessons of tolerance as a key ingredient to peace and economic prosperity have been proven by experience. They're actionable, they're achievable. We know they work. And they're liberating and uplifting. And they're surely cheaper than allowing extremists to cultivate our youth, have them emerge as security threats, which then require imperfect military solutions. So, Mr. Chairman, how do we do it, is the question. And I'm going to use my own foundation, but simply as an example. The Tony Blair Faith Foundation has begun a schools program now running for over 4 years, independently evaluated, which promotes cross-cultural dialogue between students aged 12 to 17 across the world, reaching students in 20 countries, with Morocco just signing on. My foundation's program called Face to Faith connects students worldwide via a secure website where they interact from their classroom under the guidance of a teacher trained in facilitating the critical social and emotional skills young people need. For schools in the poorer areas, we use special arrangements because, of course, they cannot access the website themselves. My Faith Foundation program features facilitated video conferences where students discuss global issues from a variety of faith and belief perspectives. And through Face to Faith, students gain the dialogue skills required to prevent conflict by breaking down religious and cultural stereotypes. It teaches religious and cultural literacy. It teaches people of different nations and religious traditions to see themselves in one another. And in doing so, we're working to promote cross-cultural understanding, equipping young people with key 21st century skills that they need to live in a world of diverse faiths and beliefs. And we are giving students key mediation and negotiation skills so that they are able to hold meaningful and respectful interfaith discussions, even if their views will sometimes diverge. Now, of course, we only reach a fraction of global youth. But with experience in now well over 1,000 schools, 50,000 students have gone through the program and working in countries as diverse as the United States, Canada, Australia, Italy, the UK on the one hand, Pakistan, India, Jordan, Egypt, the Philippines, Indonesia on the other, we can see the great and beneficial impact the interaction has. Basically, it works. The students love it, and it changes minds and mindsets. Now, there are many other fantastic examples of interfaith programs for young people in every corner of the globe. So what's the challenge? The challenge is they have neither the resource, the weight, or the recognition they need. Because our opponents, too, have their programs. And they're funded, and they're highly organized, and they're therefore, unfortunately, effective. So our challenge is straightforward. And this is my message to you today. We know what works. The challenge is to mobilize. The conquering of any prejudice requires two things: an honest discussion of the prejudice and a mobilization of support to defeat it. This is true whether the prejudice is of race, nation, or gender. And it's also true of religious prejudice. So I would like to see us as the international community, the UN and its Security Council recognize this. I advocate governments taking seriously their responsibility to educate young people to cultural acceptance and respect between people of different faiths and cultures. I would ask that each government, each state, establishes at least one pilot program in such intercultural understanding amongst young people. Experiment with it and experience it. Let the young people in your country experience firsthand an opportunity to learn about the world and to form a relationship with someone far away who may not look like them, but for whom, once they have been schooled in cross-cultural education, they may see themselves in. My foundation, of course, is willing to work in any country which invites us. But there are many, many other excellent organizations who do similar work. The 2007 Toledo Guiding Principles on Teaching About Religion and Beliefs in Public Schools, which was adopted by the organization Security and Coordination in Europe, show how this can be done sensitively. So my suggestion, Mr. Chairman, is that we seek to do this as a group of United Nations. Then let us consider the results of such pilot programs and see how they can be scaled, and therefore how each and every government can meet the challenge of opening the minds of their youth to mutual religious and cultural respect. So in conclusion, Mr. Chairman, I think when we look at the world today and we see this enormous force of extremism and analyze its root causes, whatever security measures we take, nothing will work unless we're also going right down into the way our young people are educated about those who are different. That's why I say that education in the 21st century is a security issue. And in this sense, I would submit that we do know the answer. It is to educate the next generation of young people to the open mind. There's no better cause than this, and there's nothing more urgent. Thank you.
I would like to thank Mr. Blair for his very interesting presentation, and now I open the floor to the members of the committee to discuss first. Does any member of the committee wants to the floor? No, I'm just, yeah, but we're just to see the ambassador of United Kingdom and Great Britain.
Thank you very much, Mr. Blair, for this presentation, and thank you for all the work that the foundation does. It really clearly does work. I had two questions to ask, because clearly the need for this sort of education is in the places that are the most hard to access. And the countries you've mentioned are perhaps more open to working with others from different faiths, different countries, than some other countries. And I wonder if you have ideas of how you can get into those hard-to-access places in countries which are much more closed and therefore resistant, perhaps, to this form of cross-cultural educational experience. The second link to that is you're working with school children. Is there plans to expand the program beyond school children to other vulnerable groups? I'm thinking of prisoners, for instance. Prisoners are very prone to radicalization and extremist education. Are there plans for you to work through prison groups as well? Thank you.
I propose that we can take questions from members of the committee first, and then you can answer, Mr. Blair. Is there any member of the committee wants the floor? Australia, you have the floor, sir.
And thank you, Chair, for the initiative today in holding this extremely important meeting on an issue which is central to our collective efforts to maintain international peace and security. And thank you, Mr. Blair, for your presentation and for the indispensable work that the Tony Blair Faith Foundation does. As the threat of terrorism is increasingly diffuse, with terrorist groups exploiting vulnerabilities such as poverty and existing grievances across the globe, youth radicalisation has obviously become one of our greatest vulnerabilities, and clearly, as you have set out so eloquently this morning, education must be central to any strategy to counter this vulnerability. We're very pleased the Foundation is working in Australia, and it is working. Well-informed individuals, open and inclusive communities and institutions that respect diversity are obviously the best defence against extremist ideologies, as you've said, and we welcome the ideas that have been put forward about how we equip young people in particular with the knowledge and skills to critically analyse and debate issues and empower them to resist the influence of the poisonous ideologies, as you said. Of course, as a multicultural society, this is something that we face and on a daily basis, and we're taking an active role in raising awareness and improving understanding of different cultures, faiths and shared values through our education system. Obviously, this only works in strong partnership, as you've said, with civil society. Absolutely crucial. Government cannot do it alone, and this is certainly something that that we have realised in this sector. We are, of course, also very pleased to be working with partners in the region, including Indonesia and the Philippines, just to name two. And in this scenario, we cannot overstate the importance of sister school programs of individual children speaking through Skype and other mechanisms with each other in each other's languages, recognising and respecting each other's differences. And this has been something that Australia has found extremely useful and important. And important from an interfaith perspective, but also more broadly in terms of cultural understanding. Just a couple of particular points to recognise. The UK has already noted the problem of radicalisation within prison populations. This is something that Australia is also very focused on, including in our region, and be interested, like the UK, in ideas there. Online radicalisation, it's clearly fruitless to try and control content on the internet, but how we can best use the internet to communicate that powerful counter-narrative is of great interest, and any particular ideas there would be welcome. And thirdly, many of us face the growing problem of foreign fighters who are travelling to conflict zones, engaging in extremist activity and then returning and bringing that experience and ideology home. And that's clearly a particular type of education challenge which many countries are grappling with, and any thoughts on that would be welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Australia. I give the floor to the distinguished ambassador of Pakistan.
I want to thank Prime Minister Blair for his very compelling and inspiring statement today. I have two very brief questions. What is the correlation between counterterrorism and countering violent extremism? And the second question is that why is the violent extremist narrative the main narrative and ours is a counter narrative? How what can we do, let's say under your leadership, to turn our narrative as the main narrative and the extremist narrative as counter-narrative? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ambassador.
I give the floor to the representative of Togo. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Prime Minister, for your intervention. One question. We know that education is one of the key attributes of a state. So states cannot contribute to promoting education unless together they themselves are convinced of the need of it. So we note that it can happen that a state doesn't play a very clear role. I don't want to, but as I said, it's important for states to be convinced or at least accept the concept or the objective of education in order to combat terrorism and extremism before implementing it. Now, your foundation, what relationship do you have with states? How do you work with states in that respect? Thank you.
If there is no other member from the committee requesting the floor, France, I'm sorry. Madame, vous avez la parole.
Madam, you have the floor. Thank you, Chairman. I too would like to thank Prime Minister Blair for his excellent presentation. France, my country, is particularly committed to that issue, combating violent extremism. France was affected some months ago on its territory. I'm talking about the Mera affair. This is an issue, it's rather a recent issue, that in terms of counterterrorism affects the question, touches on the question of radicalization of lone individuals. So I think that the issues of education in that respect have a very important role to play. And my country is particularly interested by your foundation's initiative. So I just wanted to ask a question regarding the role that can be played by the victims of terrorism in discussions that might take place via your foundation. Because often we know that the fate of the victims is a very important element in the whole narrative, in the discourse used to counter terrorism. So do you think that this issue could be used in a the issue of victims could be used in a pertinent matter within your foundation?
The committee. We maybe, Mr. Blair, we give you the floor to answer members of the committee, or we take one or two more questions from Bangladesh.
Yeah.
Okay. The distinguished ambassador of Bangladesh, you have the floor. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and I especially thank Prime Minister for your eloquent speech, and very, you know, it has a lot of fashion that we want. See, Bangladesh has been promoting for years a culture of peace resolution. And you are right on target when you said education is a security issue. And you also said we have to educate to have an open mind. In our culture of peace resolution, we believe all violence, all misunderstandings and terrorism emanates from a mindset of intolerance, from a mindset of disrespect for others. So if we can create a mindset of tolerance, if we create a mindset of respect for others, a mindset of love and good feeling for others, irrespective of religion, ethnicity, or any diversity, then we can create a world for a peaceful world, in a long-lasting peace. So in this context, this resolution we have been passing every year. This year it is on the table now again. And we need your support. The support of the United Kingdom and the European Union, because we have been receiving co-sponsorship over many, many years, but except some of the European members. So my appeal is, and because we feel that we are on the same track, you are asking for education, and we are asking to eliminate ignorance about diversities, you know. If we can do so, my question to you, that can we work together on this same plane so that we can create a mindset of tolerance, a mindset of respect for others, and we can promote this issue for a longer lasting peace in this planet Earth? Thank you, sir.
I thank you, Ambassador of Bangladesh. There is no more request for the floor, Mr. Blair. Can you have the floor? Would you please identify yourself?
Yes, Paul Edgerton. I'm the WMO representative to the United Nations.
I would like to first of all say thank you very much, Mr. Blair, for the excellent presentation, which was very enlightening. The question is really what measures could be used to evaluate the impact of these targeted education programs. So how can we really determine if this has made a difference to the overall global security situation over the long term? So really the gap between trying to look at the educational measures at the front end, but the impacts of this at the global political level and how this makes a real difference to countries working together on combating extremism. Thank you.
I thank you, sir. Mr. Blair has a commitment and he has to leave soon. So please, if you can be short, and I give the floor now to the representative of United Arab Emirates. Emirates, you have the floor, please. Are you requesting the floor?
Yeah.
You have the floor, please.
عفوا, ممثل اليمن. I am the representative of Yemen.
What is the representative of Emirates?
شكرا جزيلا. I thank you very much to His Excellency the Prime Minister for the excellent principles his foundation is serving. Education is important, but how can we apply this initiative in far-reaching places? In Yemen, we suffer from extremism, from terrorism, but most extremists are found in far-reached areas, in the mountains, in the Sahara. How can we change this? First of all, we have to resort to the security measure, then to the economic solution, then we can reach the education solution. How can your foundation help us in this? Thank you very much.
And I beg the indulgence of the audience here because Mr. Blair has to leave in 5 minutes, so we will give him the floor to have a chance to answer the questions, comments, and then we'll stop the session. Thank you. Mr. Blair, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. First of all, in relation to the question posed by the UK and just now by the representative from Yemen, I mean, we actually do operate as a foundation in some very hard-to-reach places, but the basic point is absolutely right. Look, the risk always with a program such as this is you get to those that maybe are already quite open to the thought. So the question is, how do you actually get to where the problem really, really is? And, of course, there can be issues of security and so on that make this very hard. But my view is that the single thing that is most important to begin with is that we get the issue out on the table as it is. And let me just say what I mean by that, because it also, I think, it comes to the points raised by Australia and also by His Excellency from Pakistan. Politicians often, and I speak as a politician, right? Mm-hmm. But politicians often want to think of this issue as if it were just a subset of politics. And I don't doubt that political issues play a great part. You know, there can be political causes and grievances and problems and issues to do with poverty and social injustice. Of course, all of these things are very important. However, I think this issue of education for a cultural open mind is of itself important. And so what is necessary is to start by getting it out on the table and getting it debated for what it is. And then, yes, of course, you're going to start often with the easiest places, but then you can start to take it down to the harder places. And step by step, what you do is you create platforms of understanding, you organize and you mobilize support. And if we take any great cause there's been. You know, you take the cause of the fight against racism. Right? It started, you know, it had to start somewhere. And yes, it's true, sometimes it started amongst elites. But in the end, you know, this is now an accepted principle, not always obeyed, but an accepted principle. And I think we have to do the same with religious or cultural prejudice. You know, we have to get it out on the table for what it is and start somewhere. I think the issue of online radicalization is really, really important. And we, again, have to use the means and the methods to counter this. Because what is extraordinary about the extremists is their philosophy or their ideology may be very old-fashioned, but they are very willing to use new methods of technology in order to communicate it. And I think, again, we have to be smarter and better and quicker and more effective in countering it. The narrative, as His Excellency from Pakistan says, you see, I think the narrative has to be that this is important, this cultural openness, not just for reasons of peace. It's also the route to prosperity. There is no society today and no economy that's going to be successful and prosperous if in a world that works by connectivity, people are closed-minded towards those that are different. Right. So the narrative that we have to put in place is a narrative that is about opportunity as well as about compassion and kindness. In other words, I think it's got to be a narrative that has a whole statement about the future economically, in terms of prosperity, as well as simply in terms of peace. In respect of the questions from Togo and France, tout d'abord, monsieur, je vous remercie.
First of all, thank you for your question. I think it's very important for us as a foundation to have good relations with states. And we have begun now in establishing relations between my foundation and states. Because if states are behind the programme, then it's much easier to be effective. So we have begun along those lines. And we would like to continue with doing so with other states. Also, when it comes to the victims of terrorism, I think they can play a very important role because they can voice, they can express their sentiments with great emotion and they can convince other people that there is a different method for resolving profound problems.
And my apologies for my French. It reminds me of the one time I addressed the French National Assembly, which is quite honestly the most terrifying thing I ever did in my life. In respect of the colleague from Bangladesh, I'm not absolutely familiar with the resolution, but we should discuss it, and I'm very happy to work together with you on that and my foundation to offer what support we can, and I totally agree with what you say about the need to combat intolerance and have respect. And then finally, to the colleague from Poland, I think. From Poland? From? Right, I thought, because I thought otherwise there was someone who spoke perfect English. I'm sure that, by the way, a lot of Poles do speak perfect English, especially nowadays. You make a very important point, which is a good point to conclude on, which is how do we evaluate? I mean, we do evaluate our program. We have that done independently by the University of Warwick. I think one of the reasons why I asked for people, for states to consider having at least pilot programs is so that we get some basic data back, some evaluation of these types of programs. But I was present this morning at a video conference between a school out in the Middle East, an Islamic educational college, and a Catholic school here in New York. And even in that short hour that I witnessed the interaction of those young people, all of them spoke to what a profound impact it had had on them. And I think when we think about it, it's really very obvious. If you know someone and can put a human face on someone who is different, then it's a lot easier to respect them and a lot harder to hate them. So I suggest that what we do is we do experiment and we gain experience, but we start to treat this issue, as I say, as not marginal to the issues of countering terrorism, but absolutely fundamental to it. And thank you all very, very much indeed for listening to me today. Thank you.
On behalf of the committee, I would like to thank again Mr. Blair for his presentation, and I would also like to thank all the participants for their contributions. We will hear now the concluding remarks by Mr. Laborde, the Executive Director of CITED.
Well, Mr. President, I prepared a speech, but I don't want to deliver a speech after that wonderful exposé from Mr. Blair. There is no need to add anything about that. I think that the conclusion comes by itself. There is only one word I would like to say. It reminds me one French poet, Paul Valéry. When he entered the French Academy, you refer to the French Assembly, Parliamentary Assembly, l'Assemblée Nationale. I will refer to the French Academy. In his speech, when he entered, when he was introduced to the Academy, he said, I will say that in French, and I will translate in English as I can, nous autres civilisations, nous savons maintenant que nous sommes mortels. Which means in English, as civilization, we know now that we can die, let's say. I really think that with such, let's say, involvement, commitment in the education against terrorism and to counter violent extremism, we can say one day that the poet has not said the truth. On peut faire mentir le poète. Thank you very much.
I declare now the adjourn the session. Thank you.